episode of Revolution Recap. Revolution took a thrilling 2-2 draw from Orlando tonight. New England showed some rotation in tonight's match with 9 changes to the lineup. And Orlando, who is still battling for playoff positioning, made the Revs pay early. They built a 2-0 lead. But Adam Buksa came off the bench to save the day with a brace, his 15th and 16th goals of the season, helping the Revs leave Florida with a 2-2 draw. And, oh yeah, the Revolution won the supporter shield for the first time in their history, so following a Seattle Sounders loss on Saturday. So a very, very good weekend to be a Revs fan. I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me today is Chris Valukas. Chris, how are you?
Matt, how am I doing? Supporter shield, a Buksa brace. Come on, can I be any happier right now? Let's go. I'm stoked. I'm so happy. I can't wait to see the Revs get back into Foxborough Stadium and just have the home fans really embrace them and see that homecoming. I don't know how the Wednesday night match is gonna be for a turnout, but you know that November 7th game is looking real juicy.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun to see the supporter shield finally make it into Foxborough. Actually, we're going to go straight to a listener comment. I actually don't have a whole ton of takeaways from this game. Normally, we start out with a takeaway, a key takeaway from the game. It's hard to take away a lot from this game because so many rotating players came in, but we do have Adam Buksa, number one fan, who is on the line. We're going to start out with a listener question tonight. So Adam Buksa, number one fan, also known as Super Angry 66691. How are you doing tonight? What are your thoughts on tonight's game? Oh, and he muted himself. No!
The perils of live broadcasting.
I went straight to the people this time. Adam Buksa, number one fan. Are you there?
I mean, if you're asking who the number one fan is, I guess I am here. And I don't know who this imposter is calling himself or herself the number one fan. It's a little bit, you know, in my face here.
Very possible he's on his desktop. Usually it works better if you are on your mobile phone. So just a little heads up there to the listeners out there that maybe there's some technical difficulties. Before we get into it, Chris, why don't we talk about the lineup. The Revolution run out 9 substitutions, or not substitutions, but they changed 9 players in their lineup this week. Really, only Andrew Farrell and Matt Turner started in this game. Were you surprised to see the rotation, obviously, with the Revolution clinching the supporter shield on Saturday, you know, obviously I think Bruce Arena wanted to rest some of his key players. Were you surprised to see that rotation? And then on top of that, were you surprised to see the key players coming in midway through this game at halftime in the 60th minute?
Yes and no. So absolutely surprised to see the substitutions being made in the rotation. If there was rotation, I expected it to be in the midweek match, not tonight. Maybe it makes a bit more sense doing it that way because of the current schedule. The Revolution are playing a Wednesday, a Sunday, and a Wednesday. So I guess it does make sense maybe to rest some more players on the Sunday game. But the entire squad, that was a real shocker to me. I didn't quite see that. The only regular starters that were in the starting 11 was Andrew Farrell and Matt Turner. I wasn't prepared for this. You know, the team finally clinches their first ever supporter shield and everyone's riding this real high. And then we get into the match, you know, just over 24 hours later. And then you roll out this lineup. It was a little bit, I don't know, like a sideways stance that I ended up taking. It was really threw me for a loop.
Well, I wonder too, if conditions to, you know, impact this decision, because it was coming down very hard in this game, and you know, I think Bruce has before had planned substitutions where he brings in people at halftime 60 minutes, so I feel like this was a bit of a script and he's limiting minutes here, but I wonder if we might have seen more of a first team if it wasn't, you know, a downpour, and maybe he wanted to kind of rest some of his key players from playing in these conditions. The one thing I'll say about this lineup too is I was a little surprised Matt Turner started, because I know some people have been talking about how much he's been playing. He's never really even had a full season in MLS. You know, his first season, he ended up getting benched towards the end of the year. His second year, he wasn't the starter. He was behind Cropper at Knighton. And then last year, obviously, there was the COVID, so he didn't play as many games. So I wonder if maybe a little bit of fatigue is setting in for Matt Turner. And I thought maybe Brad Knighton getting another game. You know, if you're going to do a line change anyway, why not put in Knighton? So A little surprised about, you know, Matt Turner not getting the night off while everyone else did. And also Andrew Farrell has been, you know, one guy that's been playing all year round too. Surprised we didn't see a Kessler-Bell pairing to see how that works, because that's something that I think Bruce has talked about doing in the past. But alas, interesting lineup overall. It ended up working out in the end. I was a little surprised to see the starters coming in. You know, I feel like if you're going to rest players, rest players. But it, you know, Bruce knows better than me, and that result is proof of that. So,
And I have to say, once I came to grips with the lineup, I really thought that it was a good idea. Like, I needed to just like let go of what I wanted to see and think about what's better for the team. And I think that, you know, Bruce made the right decision in going out with this sort of a lineup. And I thought seeing Bunbury and Boateng playing together was really delightful. You know, they weren't a fantastic duo up top, but it was really fun and interesting to see how they played together and how they both really pressed played the high press against Orlando. And I thought it was a lot of fun to watch.
I think we have Adam Buxa, number one fan, back on the line. Adam Buxa, number one fan, are you there?
Yeah, what's up?
Yes, it works second time. How's it going? What's on your mind tonight?
Adam Buxa, best striker in the league, no doubt, easily. Number one.
Apparently, according to some Fox Sports hosts, he's also an MVP candidate, which I think before the game we kind of laughed at. But honestly, I mean, maybe we can make that outside argument. I don't think so. I still think that he is maybe third on this list, third on the team in terms of MVP candidates. But boy, what a game changer today. And, you know, sometimes we talked last year a lot about the Revs struggled against teams that bunkered in and there was no way to break them down. And Adam Buxa is such a threat in the air that, you know, it's a very simple play. Dewan Jones on that second one, just a simple cross. Buxa is able to outjump the defense. It's instant offense, and he's such a weapon there. So a real game changer. Adam Buxa, best striker in the league. I'm all for that. Chris, any thoughts?
I'm riding that train. I've been riding that train since 2020, man.
Yeah, we saw in the game a few months ago against the Red Bulls, we were down, what was it, 2-0, 75th minute. Adam Buxa comes back with, I think, two goals for the win, for the 3-2 win. It's he's a game changer completely.
And he does so much more than just score goals too. His play off the ball, it really generates a lot of offense, and it allows the rest of the team to play into the attack. And I think it's such an overlooked aspect of his game, and the fact that he's such a physical presence, I think that goes a little bit understated as far as Adam Buxa's play. I would say he's the best striker. If you give me a list of strikers around the league and tell me who you want, I would pick Adam Buxa. Am I biased? 100%. But I still want Adam Buxa out there. I know he hits a lot of posts, but imagine if half of his shots that hit the post went into the net. You know, he'd be over 20 goals this season. He'd have double digits last season. It'd be really impressive, and he'd have even more goals for Poland too.
I mean, it's honestly a shame that people have Raul Ruiz Diaz as the MVP candidate over it, Adam Buxa. That's where I find it clownery around that area.
Well, I think the issue with Adam Buxa here is that you'll split the Revs votes. It's very hard to say, Adam Buxa, his MVP case is really strong because you do have Gustavo Bo, who is putting up some great goal and assist numbers. Carlisle Hill is the best playmaker in the league. It's weird to say because you look at the numbers and you think these are MVP level numbers. He does deserve to, be in the conversation, I would say, but being, probably, I think a lot of supporters would say third on your team in terms of the third most important player. And even then, I think some people would rate Matt Turner above Adam Buxa in terms of importance, quote unquote, and maybe behind Tajon Buchanan as well. So it's I think he's hurt very much. And that's why, other players on other teams, when they are the clear favorite, the clear number one important piece on their team, I think that's why they are getting the shouts on that in that level.
I will say, though, Adam Buxa now has a better stat line than Raul Ruiz Diaz. Ruiz Diaz has 16 goals and one assist on the season. Adam Buxa with 16 goals and three assists definitely puts him ahead of Raul Ruiz Diaz on the Golden Boot list. And now, there's only Ola Kamara left, and Ola Kamara has been on a pretty cold streak lately. So we'll see how that plays out. It'll be really fun to see a Revs player actually take home the Golden Boot as well. The Golden Boots, as I tweeted to Greg earlier today, or messaged Greg.
Yes. And I'll say, you know, we're not going to cover the DC game, but that back heel pass to Gustavo Bo on Wednesday. I believe that was the DC game on Wednesday.
Yeah. Chef's kiss.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Randy LH has been waiting to comment on tonight's game. Randy, how's it going? What are your thoughts tonight?
Hey, gentlemen. Doing well. How are you all doing?
We're doing phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yeah, I know, right? Doing a hell of a lot better than I was 30 minutes ago when we were down 2-1. Looks like it was ending.
It's funny how much I didn't think I cared about that game, and then Adam Books has scored that second goal, and I was I jumped up.
Absolutely. Woke my poor dog up. I felt bad about it. I speaking of which, though, I'd actually want to talk about that. You all already mentioned the lineup changes that he made coming into the game, and I want to get your thoughts on the significant changes about halfway through and then around the 60th minute or so when all of our, you know, our five best players came on the field. On the one hand, yeah, getting a point is phenomenal. Going for three is great. You want to cultivate a winning or at least a fighting to the very end mentality, and that's all awesome. On the other hand, I mean, practically speaking, this game and the next two are actually meaningless. They don't actually mean anything for our season with the exception of the points record, which you don't get a trophy or anything for. So, I mean, it's great, but practically speaking, we don't really care. So where do you all fall on that? Like, I'm glad that he did it because the end result was so good, but I think I would be feeling differently if we ended up losing 2-1 or 3-2 or something like that. So where do you all fall on that, the decision to play the starters eventually?
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry, someone cut me off there. So you go, whoever
starts
talking, go.
All right, I agree 100% with that because I tweeted out earlier before the lineups were posted. I said I really hope that Bruce Arena doesn't start the starters this game because it will just, you know, give some of the players some time, like Maciel, who hasn't seen minutes in a long time, honestly. It gave him some time to adjust to the game more before playoffs, and I think adding them to the final of the game was a great idea as well, but that's just my take, honestly.
Yeah, I it's interesting because in my mind, if you're resting guys, you're resting guys. And I think with the game on Wednesday too, you're still going to be able to keep your players fresh, even if you give them a full 90 minutes off. So I was a little surprised. It seems like rest was important here to some degree, and they're kind of managing minutes. But yeah, does this draw, I mean, at the end of the day, is this really that impactful? Not really. I don't think the Revs, you know, I don't think Bo or Heel is not very sharp, or they're going to lose sharpness if they wait until Wednesday for Colorado to play. Now I wonder, you know, one narrative that's going around is, you know, once the playoffs start between that November 7th game against Miami and their next one, it's going to be 20 to 25 days off for the Revs. And Bruce Arena kind of made a comment that he joked that, you know, they stupidly qualified for the bye, so they're going to have some extra rest, and they're talking about potentially bringing in a USL side to scrimmage during that long gap. So, you know, it might be that they're trying to get their best players some rest, but also trying to keep some sharpness as well. So I think that maybe that is kind of what they're going for. But in my mind, I wouldn't have made that change. It was a very wet field. Orlando was very physical towards the end of that half. And then I think you made this point too, Adam Books, a fan. You know, I wanted to see some of these other players get some minutes and see who could earn minutes tonight. I wanted to see Maciel play against a really tough Orlando team at home in poor conditions. I wanted to see Mafla and De La Garza, who I don't think were particularly very sharp tonight. I wanted to see Tristason to see if he could earn some minutes. I wanted to see Bunbury up top. And, you know, we did see a little bit of that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I would have made those. I don't know if I would have made those changes. And when they went down 2-0, I definitely wasn't a fan of those changes. So I've rambled on a little bit. That's my thoughts.
I think I would chime in on this and say Bruce might be going for something that I would call situational preparedness. As we're heading into the playoffs and you're down two goals and you're putting on your starters saying, hey, this is a situation that you're going to be facing potentially in the postseason. How are you going to respond? Show me that you're going to go out there and you're going to get this correct. This is, you know, these are professional athletes. This is something that they should be able to take care of and should be able to handle. But this is also a scenario that you are not able to replicate, especially in such a volatile atmosphere. Even though the Revs don't have to worry about that the rest of the season now, it's still a fantastic, you know, training exercise, if nothing else, before heading into the playoffs and, you know, getting into some of those situations potentially, and seeing how the team is going to react.
I think that's a great point, Chris. I actually 100% agree that might have been what he was doing. And I think that's a good idea if it was. And the one other thing I think is, you know, the way we were playing, if we hadn't made some substantial substitutions, we could have lost that game 4 or 5 to nothing. I mean, Orlando was dominating the game right up until we scored the first goal, frankly, which was like the practically the 80th minute. Like, Orlando was going to trounce us. And you got to wonder what that would do to the mentality of these, you know, B-team guys and even, you know, the couple of A-teamers or first-teamers, whatever, who were brought on. Like, you get absolutely beaten down right before the playoffs start. That can't be good for cultivating the right mentality of the team. So I think that might have played a role in it too.
I will say it could have gone the other direction too, though. So to your point, Randy, if any player got injured, for instance, I know that Greg and Sean and I were talking about this quite a bit during the match, that if any player got injured, this would be a completely different storyline.
And I'll add on to Randy's point, though, on why you don't want to get crushed in this game. You know, you might see Orlando in the playoffs. So if Orlando is hanging a 4-0 win over you, even if it's a little fluky, you know, mentally that might do something to the kind of psyche of the players going into that game. So, Mike, any Revs UK? I know you've been on hold a long time. Also, Paul and Gustavo, I know you're on hold too. But we'll get to Mike first, and then I'll hop to you guys. If anyone listening wants to join in the conversation, you can request to listen. I'll get to you guys one at a time. Everyone will get to talk and express their thoughts on the Revs. But, Mike, any Revs UK, thank you for joining us. I know it's past your bedtime. What are your thoughts on tonight's game?
That's how we start this every time, it's past my bedtime. I came into this with a different thought, but obviously what Chris has literally just said about the, if it was an idea to help us kind of gain that mental fortitude that, you know, there's going to be a chance that we're going to be 2-0 down in a playoff game, I think that's a great call from Bruce. But at the same time, I was worried that if any of them players picked up an injury, it could have been really bad for us, especially obviously as just we've all mentioned the pitch wasn't, you know, in the best condition due to the weather. But I feel like we had some good moments in the game. Even when we were 2-0 down, I wasn't really overly concerned. But then it seemed that Orlando kind of looked to almost go for the kill, and that's when I did start getting a bit worried, because I didn't really want a 3-4-0. Loss hanging over us against, especially a team like Orlando, mostly because they've got Nani in their team, if I'm being brutally honest. But the biggest takeaway for me of the whole match was I still don't understand what Wilfried Kapteyn is doing. I don't get what we saw in him, or what his position is for the Revs, what he can offer us. Because for me, I always look at players, and football players are generally all of a similar-ish standard. So they've all got to a certain level because of, you know, they can play football to a decent standard. But I always look at players and what they do off the ball, because I think that's the biggest thing for noticing, you know, the difference between world-class players and just good players. And I watched Wilfried a lot tonight, and I didn't get it. I don't understand what he's been brought in to do or offer us, because for me he's not shown anything at all. So just wondering what your guys' thoughts on Kapteyn is.
You know, I think that he was brought in essentially to back up Carles Gil. Obviously, the salary he's getting, it's not necessarily a backups type salary, but positionally, it's a lot of where do you play him. I know he's been put as a defensive midfielder or more box-to-box central midfielder than he is attacking, but his skill set really pushes him into the attacking side. As I say that, I am careful to mention that because he is very good at, you know, losing the ball when it comes to one-on-one challenges. He's also pretty skilled at getting around players. I thought that he showed a lot more tonight than he's shown for the rest of the season or earlier on in the season. At the same time, I think that he also showed why he's not a consistent starter for this club. You know, Footmob rates him a 7.1 for tonight, which I think is actually maybe kind, if anything. But he did have 84% pass success, which I thought was a good sign from him. 58 touches, which is another positive when it comes to Wilfried Kapteyn, because he's typically not getting over 50 touches a game when he does play. So I think those are a couple of positives to take away. I thought that he did okay. But as far as what he's supposed to offer, I'm not really sure. You know, I see him more as a backup bench player, and I think that's exactly the role that he's falling into.
Well, I think originally what the thought was he would be paired with Polster in kind of that 4-2-3-1. And I think we saw some flashes tonight from Kaptum. I thought this was one of his better games. He was 5-for-6 on dribbles attempted tonight. He had 10 recoveries. He did play a full 90 minutes, and he came in with some injuries earlier this season. So I wonder if, you know, he doesn't have that explosiveness right now, you know, with Adam Buksa taking off this season. I wonder if maybe he's getting adjusted to the league a little bit as well. So I know we've been hard on him lately. I'm going to kind of take the half glass half full kind of approach right now and kind of say maybe there's something a little bit more to him, and maybe he's going to be this, you know, great ball possessing midfielder with some vision that, and we just haven't seen the best of him yet. But from what we've seen so far, I'm kind of with you, Mike. I'm still not totally sure why this is a $500,000 player, which is what he's getting paid. So I'm curious to see where they go with him in this offseason. I wonder if they still see some more potential and they just don't need him right now. This could be a scenario kind of similar to Mofla, where they brought him in for this role. And, you know, just like how Mofla was replaced with DeJuan Jones and they didn't really need Mofla, Tommy McNamara has kind of taken over that role a little bit. And there's been kind of some players in the central midfield that have kind of taken away those minutes, and we haven't really needed Kaptum. But yeah, overall, it's really tough to say, like, what is the one thing Kaptum does really, really well? I really struggle to tell you what that is. I'm not completely sure. And you'd kind of hope to see a little bit more of a guy that brings in that salary. So.
Yeah, and $500,000, Mike, just so you know, that's 363,000 British pounds.
Thank you.
Thank you for the conversion there. Thank you for the conversion there, Chris. Gustavo Lopez, I know you've been waiting a long time. I think this is the first person ever to go directly from radio to live Twitter spaces. But Gustavo, very excited to have you on Revolution Recap. What are your thoughts on tonight's game?
Thank you, my friend. It's a huge honor to be here. I just left the radio. I'm about to eat a Brazilian hot dog, which I recommend you all to do. just talking a little bit on Kaptum, I don't think you should ask him about why he's worth $500,000. You should ask who brought him, who saw him, because I believe nobody went to saw him playing. I don't think so. And I like him so far, but I don't think he's worth $500,000. But I think you should ask who brought him, what did they saw to make, like, to buy him and pay him that much. I like the lineup. I didn't expect Bruce. I told this before the game. I didn't expect Bruce to go with a full team. He always do that. He always makes the teams for like 5 or 6 bench players in the team, and then he puts Jill and the rest of the starters in the second half. I want to say I'm sorry to Buksa for everything bad I ever said about him. It was a lot of stuff, so I'm sorry multiple times. I'm so happy for Marcel. I talked to him, and he was, like, injured. And, of course, the Revs didn't tell us much about what Ranger and all that, but, like, he's such a nice kid. He's trying to learn English. He's a great player, and I feel so happy for him for coming back for the first team. And I'm so, like, I would say happy because of the second half, but like I think the Boateng and Tostosson cannot play together at all. I think both of them made the team down in creation. I think the Revs should hire another playmaker for next season to be in the bench. I don't think Kaptum is that guy. I don't think McNamara is that guy. The same way I don't think Marcel is that guy. So I think in a depth charge, the team needs someone to like be a bench playmaker to come on the second half when we don't have Joe. But like in overall, I like the team performance. I think AJ was a little bit off tonight. I've missed one of the reporters to ask that. I think someone should have asked that to Bruce. What's the thoughts on AJ performance tonight? Because I think he was a little bit off. I'm not going to talk about the penalty. I'm just going to talk about Nani not going to shoot the penalty, which I thought was one of the worst things I ever saw from a soccer player on his level. I think he was supposed to be the one to go kick the penalty and not walk away from it. So that's pretty much it. And I think Turner is also a little bit off, but I don't think he has fouled enough the 2 goals tonight. And great game by Angel Farrell tonight.
I agree with pretty much everything you said right there. And I do want to also give a shout out to Maciel, who I think the only real complaint I have from him tonight, I would have to go through my notes again. But he had a moment, I believe the second goal, he could have probably crossed that down a little bit better. That was a really nice goal overall. And I'm kind of just nitpicking here, but for a guy to come up from Revs 2 to immediately be in the mix at the beginning of the season like he was, I know he's had some injuries. It's probably a very difficult spot for a kid to be in, but we talk about, talking about Captoom and how he's kind of disappointed. He's one of the players. Maciel has been one of the players that has really stepped up and added to a crowded midfield, which I think coming into the season, a lot of people kind of saw as a weakness. So he's a phenomenal player. I'm sure he's going to be with the Revolution next year and, for years in the future, but it's going to be very exciting to see him grow. And it's really nice to see the Revolution 2 USL side, bringing up some talent in him and John Bell and kind of paying off dividends this season.
Yeah, I want to echo that a little bit on Maciel, because I thought that he had a great performance tonight. And Gustavo, thank you for bringing him up as well. I was just talking about Captoom's numbers, and I'm looking at Maciel's right now. He had better passing statistics, 95% completion, just about the same amount of touches as Captoom. But he actually did a very good job when it comes to duels as well. He won 5 of his 8 duels. It's something that you want to see from a defensive midfielder that's, especially a younger midfielder coming up from the reserves team to the first team. I thought he had a very good game overall. I'm not going to be like Greg and nitpick right now. The Revs are Supporter Shield winners, and this game didn't matter. And I'm not going to be negative Nancy tonight.
Well, yeah, and sorry for cutting you off, but when I saw Maciel on the team, I was like, why do they need Captoom and Maciel? I think they play in the same position. I think they do pretty much the same job. Like, theoretically, they do the same position, the same job. So I think that's a good fight to see who's above who in the depth chart. And so far, from what I saw, I think Maciel stepped up very well. And I think he's the guy in the midfield from when we need someone from the bench. I don't think he's above McNamara or Poulter, of course, but I think he's our third option in midfield.
I absolutely agree. I agree 100% with that analysis there, Gustavo. The one thing I do want to add also about your comments there is AJ De La Garza. And I don't want me to call anyone out, maybe potentially someone in the – maybe another Revolution podcaster in the chat. But I've been hearing some chatter recently about potentially starting AJ De La Garza over Brandon Bye, and that potentially being a battle. And I got to say, I think Brandon Bye, while he's had some struggles, AJ De La Garza, I don't think, did anything to win minutes tonight. I don't think that was a really good showing at all. Footmob has him as the lowest-rated player on the Revolution tonight. He 76% pass accuracy, which is pretty decent, but he was only 3 for 8 on duels won. And he obviously had that penalty conceded. Just seemed to be a little bit mismatched going up against Nani tonight. Really not a good showing from De La Garza. I think he's the big loser on the Revolution tonight in terms of a guy that potentially could have cracked his way into some minutes down the stretch and maybe into the postseason. But I think he's kind of solidified himself as a depth piece. So Paul Gerard has been...
Just a short thing. I got to leave. Thank you again for inviting me for the show. I love you guys' podcast. Now I always send questions. I love y'all, and please, people, if you have the opportunity, go try a Brazilian hot dog. It's amazing. Thank you.
Thanks, Gustavo.
And Gustavo, you can leave too, but I want all of our listeners to know, we hear a lot about people that don't cover the team. There's not enough people covering the team. Gustavo has been a great addition to the Revolution media, so please make sure you give him a follow on Twitter. A really great addition to the Revolution press corps over the past few years. So thank you very much, Gustavo, for joining us tonight.
Thank you, and please follow me on Instagram because I'm almost getting 2,000 followers. It's the same as the Twitter, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, we'll link that out. Thank you, Gustavo. Paul, I know you've been waiting a long time. Paul, what are your thoughts on tonight's Revs game?
First, I just want to say that Gustavo is absolutely right. If you haven't had a Brazilian hot dog, you got to try one. Regarding Captoom, I think it was a little interesting. They started him on the right side. And then when they started bringing on attackers, he kind of withdrew, and I wasn't really sure what position he was playing. He seemed a bit lost out there. A lot of times he was just asking for the ball, and when he got the ball, he didn't really do a whole lot with it. And I didn't really see him pressuring the ball too much on defense either, so I'm not really sure what he was doing in the second half. He was kind of asked to do maybe more than he should.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100% there. Yeah, I didn't notice that specifically. So I can't really add on to that. But Chris, do you have any thoughts?
I saw it a little bit with his positioning and the fact that he doesn't necessarily have a spot locked down for him. And I think that it was pretty evident tonight that Bruce doesn't have a specific, you know, position for Khatoum and how to use him, because he was kind of all over the field and wasn't really deployed with any real tactics in mind.
Yeah, I think we saw the game script for what this night was supposed to be back on September 22nd against the Fire at Soldier Field. In that match, they rotated 9 of 11 starters just like tonight. I think it was everyone except for Turner and Kessler that night that was rotated. They were only 1-1 at the half instead of down 1-0. So I think that was kind of the game script. Bring on Bo and Gil at halftime and go chase the win.
And obviously my memory is pretty terrible and I don't want to get cursed revs here, but if I remember correctly, that was either a Wednesday game between two Saturday games, or that was a Saturday game between two Wednesday games. That was a short rest week also. So we've seen Bruce, when there's this congested schedule of three games over 10 days or three games over 9 days, kind of maybe give 30 to 45 minutes for the designated players and the star players. So I'm not totally shocked about how he rolled out today.
Yeah, that was the same format: 3 days off, game, then 2 days off, and another game. So it seems like that was kind of the script he was trying to write again.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I don't have a huge opinion on your question there, Paul, about Khatoum, but what I do have a strong opinion on is Golasso kits and their quality products. And I want to just tell you guys that Golasso Kit's mission is to bring unique vintage jerseys to your home with a catalog of jerseys, jackets, scarves, and more from clubs and national teams from over 80 countries in the world. The passion for the beautiful game doesn't have borders, and neither does selection, with every corner of the planet represented. Whether you are a diehard Revolution fan looking to stock up on gear for the MLS playoffs, or a Manchester United fan living in shame, there is a kit for you. And if you're not sure what you want, you can check out their mystery kit packages where you enter in your size and what style of jersey you like, and Golasso will surprise you with the kit of your dreams. Chris tried out the mystery kit option and ended up with a sweet Malaysian national team jersey. And now Chris is a huge Malaysian national team fan. Huge matchups for Malaysia coming up against Cambodia and Laos in December. I know Chris is pumped about it. He'll tell you all about it, I'm sure. But getting back to Golasso kits, they're amazing. You guys should check them out. GolassoKits.com for their full selection, and make sure you're following them on Instagram at GolassoKits and on Twitter at GolassoKits as well. And when you find something you like, use promo code REVSRECAP for 15% off your order. That is promo code REVSRECAP at GolassoKits.com for 15% off your order. Links and the code are in your show notes. Anyway,
before any more questions come in from that promo, I just want to move on and just continue talking about the Revolution, please.
You don't want to talk about the Malaysian national team?
No, it's a bad topic right now.
they've been knocked out of World Cup qualifying. I know you're still a little upset about that, Chris. I'm sorry to bring up some bad memories. Joining us from the press conference, apparently the press conference is over because Sam Minton from the Bent Musket is here. Sam, I know Adam Buxa held you up. He was a little bit late tonight. How are you doing? What are your thoughts on the Revs game?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Adam Buxa finally talked to us. It was nice getting to talk to him. But wanted to shout out Golasso Kits as well. This is a free ad because I am not sponsored by them. But I got a nice mystery kit as well as a nice Ireland training top coming my way. So that will be very fun. But overall, I had no expectations for this game. And just the fact that this team was able to come back and, you know, get a draw, you know, that it was really impressive to me. Obviously, you know, being at the press conference, I didn't know if you guys already talked about this, but I feel like I have to mention it. You know, our boy John Bell got some playing time. Had a few scraps with Daryl DK. I was lucky enough to be able to ask him about that, but just how do we feel that our boy John Bell did tonight?
Amazing. He actually did very good for someone who hasn't really got that many minutes this whole season.
Yeah, well, Chris, I know what your thoughts are, Chris, so I want you to go first, and then I'll chime in with my thoughts, because I think I'm going to play devil's advocate here. So, Chris, give us your thoughts.
No, I thought Bell had a fantastic match. I thought that he really showed that he is the – at least third center back on this roster. I don't think that he's, you know, leapfrogging Farrell or Kessler for one of the starting two spots, but I think that he showed he's a viable MLS center back. The attack that Orlando put out on the pitch is a really attack heavy and just a very skilled and powerful attacking team. You know, you're looking at Nani, we all, you know, like to make fun of Nani and talk crap about the way that he plays, and you know, I don't like the way he plays at all, but of course he's a super skilled player. That's the reason he's on the pitch. That's the reason that he's a worldwide, you know, known player, because he is that good. Even Chris Muller, even though he's having a down year, he's still a fantastic winger, and he's set to go over somewhere in Europe. Daryl DK, of course, a powerhouse. And DK and Bell, that was the matchup all night. And I thought that Bell overall did a very good job. You know, I know that maybe he didn't win every single matchup, but you know what? Daryl DK is going to beat you sometimes. That's just who Daryl DK is. And I think that you have to kind of take that on. I also saw Bell making some pretty damn good passes going upfield. I also saw him make a couple passes that went out for throw-ins. But overall, I thought, you know, his vision, his attempts to try to move the ball down pitch and create an attack when nothing else was working, I thought that was very good by him. And just overall, I thought he was, you know, positionally very good and had a fantastic night. Football has him as a 6.6, which I think is a shame, but I thought he had a good match. And Greg, that's it on my rant. I'll let you play devil's advocate now.
The only thing I'm going to add is that the play where Chris Muller shoots, there's a chipped ball from DK that goes across goal. Farrell kind of heads it away. Chris Muller volleys it and misses just wide. Probably should have been a goal. John Bell gets very beat on that. He's going one-on-one with DK, and DK is able to get around him. DK is just a little bit faster than John Bell. It's just, you know, it was just a little bit of a mismatch going out one-on-one on that one. So I think John Bell overall did very well going up. You know, chasing aerials against Daryl DK is a tough battle. And for a guy to come up from Revs 2, you know, as he did earlier this year, and go up against, you know, a guy that was killing it in the English Championship, you know, that's a tough matchup. And I thought for the most part he did pretty well. But there were some moments where he just didn't seem to be a lockdown center back. And so I think, you know, if we're talking this in terms of did he take any minutes away from Henry Kessler tonight, I'm going to say no. I think Henry Kessler and Andrew Farrell is your pairing going forward. But I think overall, John Bell is a pretty solid center back. He can he can hold his head pretty high tonight. But when you say a 6.6 rating, Chris, I'm honestly not too surprised by that, because there were some moments. I think the first goal as well, that header, you know, it wasn't really his fault. He's on DK. Nani's coming in behind him to head it. If you wanted to be a tough critic, you could say that maybe Bell could have gotten to that cross. But I'm not going to say that because he was marking DK. But the play where DK beats him down on the wing, that kind of was a bring him back to reality. And, you know, maybe he's the third center back, a very good third center back, though.
Well, and Sam, I know you're a huge advocate on the announced John Bell movement and just John Bell in general. So I want to know what your takeaways were for John Bell's performance now.
Yeah, I would say I fall in the middle. You know, I definitely think it was a good performance. I definitely, especially going up against a player like Daryl DK, you know, credit to John for, you know, just being able. I love how I just called him John, like we're friends. Credit to Bell for, you know, being able to, you know, have a good performance like that. But I, you know, when you say 6.6 on FootMob, I'd probably say something maybe like 6.8, 6.9. That's kind of the range I'm looking at. But overall, you know, definitely think it's a great performance. AJ De La Garza, obviously playing a different position, but wasn't exactly his best night. So, you know, I think you really do have something in Bell. And also, too, you know, looking at Revs 2 players, you have a guy like Maciel coming back into the lineup. Obviously, I don't think he made a humongous impact, but I thought, you know, he looked good out there. And, you know, he just moves with that kind of pace that he has. And, you know, he's able to move the ball. He's able to get stuck in. And I was pretty, you know, happy with how he performed. So it's nice to see these players who kind of had good starts to the regular season, had some bumps in the road, and now are kind of coming back into the fold. So, I, you know, definitely when it comes to Bell, I thought he did well. There's definitely some room for improvement, but I don't think you complain about him being your third center back.
It's a good situation to have. So unless there's any other questions, we do have some listener questions that I want to kind of cycle through. And I'll ask these kind of to the room, too. So Mike, Sam, Randy, Paul, Adam Buxa, number one fan, if you want to chime in and give your thoughts on these questions, feel free. If you are in our chat, if you want to join in, there is a way to request to join the conversation. So please raise your hand. We will get to you as well. Or if you want to bring up something else, we can do that as well. But I do want to get through these listener questions real quick. The first question from Not Blue, Not not Green, It's Teal. He says, not having Tommy back made me truly appreciate how great Tommy Mack has been this year. Can you talk about how great he has been so he gets his props?
Yeah, I think that's such a great point that maybe it is overlooked from tonight's performance, but the fact that Tommy Mack wasn't out there, it was really lacking. That there was not a lot of cohesion in the midfield. There was not a lot of second balls being won in the midfield. And I don't necessarily put any blame towards that, towards you know, Maciel or Caicedo or even Captain Tristan. I thought that he had a pretty lousy night overall, but he also wasn't even playing in the midfield, so that's kind of a moot point. But the McNamara point, I think it's such a good point that's being brought up, and I think that it should be discussed a little bit at least. You know, even on the Fox Sports broadcast, they were talking about Tommy McNamara being a vital point of the team, which that just sounds like bonkers talk when you think about it from the start of the season when Tommy Mack was signed, and everyone thinks that he's going to be a depth piece, and he's really played a real key role in the Revs and how they've won the Supporter Shield now, which is it's just a real fascinating story and just such a great job from him.
It almost felt like Duan Jones was playing two positions. He was playing left back and going forward like Tommy Mack would have done.
Yes, yeah. Good point.
I just want to kind of overall on the season, I did have some Tommy McNamara stats pulled up and I accidentally closed out of it, which has kind of screwed me up. So I'm going to stall for time. But overall in the season, Tommy Mack, 87% pass accuracy. Goals and assists wise, he's 2 goals, 2 assists, but he does add a deep threat. He does have some long range shots that kind of keep your opponents on their toes. And when you have so many other weapons, that just makes a player a lot more valuable. I know Tommy Mack talked about the trade that brought him to the Revolution last year. And, you know, if you think about how the Revs got assets, traded Zahibo for McNamara and cash, that is an amazing trade for the Revolution because McNamara has just continued to be money and has really solidified that central midfield position. We talk about guys that have stepped up for Captoom, who's been a little disappointing. Tommy McNamara has probably been one of your better surprises for this season. So, yeah, he's really done a great job solidifying that midfield. And I think tonight seeing the, you know, B team out there, you know, obviously they miss Polster as well, but I think Tommy McNamara is kind of another piece that kind of fits this puzzle pretty well. All right, let's move on. We did get a question from Christopher Cannon. I wanted to mention this is a really good one, actually. I'm kind of bummed I didn't think of this joke earlier, but could Adam Buxa win the Golden Head Award? which I think is that's a A+ comment, and actually it makes me want to think about what the MLS record is for most goals scored from headers, because you got to think Adam Buxa is up there somewhere. So I'm going to have to make a note. If we weren't doing this immediately after the game and if I had some time to research it, I might get that number for you. So I'm going to actually do some research. I'll put Sean on that because that seems like something he would spend a day of work doing. So Josh Goulet said, so how am I supposed to feel about this game? I have so many mixed feelings, just so many. And I actually kind of struggled with this one, too, because it was a lot of fun to watch. But really, overall, are we supposed to really take anything away from it? We didn't even do our key takeaways. I don't know how the room is feeling, but I really struggle to see, you know, tomorrow I'm going to wake up, the Revs are going to be in the exact same position. Am I really supposed to be pumped about this win? I think really the fashion they won was a lot of fun, but I'm not totally sure if I'm supposed to feel that great about this this draw against Orlando.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Like I was even watching the game, I didn't know how to feel about the game. They were losing 2-0, and I didn't even care. It didn't bother me. In fact, I was kind of bored watching the game, and I had mentioned this to you as well, Greg. And up until the Buxa goal, I was just like having a real hard time to just enjoy the game because I was like, nothing's really happening. The Revs are losing. I don't really care. I'm not upset. I'm just so apathetic right now towards the game. It didn't make any difference to me whatsoever. When Buxa scored, that of course changed because I love Adam Buxa and I love watching him score goals. So that really turned my mood around. But I don't have a lot of takeaways from this game. I have a lot that I could talk about with Orlando City. If you want to talk about Orlando City tonight, we can do that. But otherwise, with the Revolution, I'm really like grasping at straws trying to find real things that we should be focusing on.
I think one thing we can look at is it's been a while since Craig's been able to post the image of Mr. Clean Sheet. It's been a while since we've been able to have zero in the goals allowed category.
It's a very, very, very good point, and something that I definitely think that we should be talking about more. Turner has been very slow, I think, overall, since the Gold Cup, and maybe it has been Turner's getting overworked, and maybe something to the point of Greg, when he opened the show, he mentioned why did Turner not get the rest of all the players that are getting rest? Why didn't Knighton get a run out? Knighton's been very good for the Revolution so far this year when he's filled in for Matt Turner. Obviously, because with the games that Matt Turner has missed, the Revolution wouldn't be Supporters Shield winners if Brad Knighton wasn't performing well. So I think that it would have made total sense to put Brad in there, give Matt a rest. Why not? And something's gotta change, because I mean that first goal that was scored, it's such a Matt Turner shot that type of save is what you are used to seeing Matt save all the time. He always gets down to his left, to his right. I think more often to his left, and he gets down and makes those saves. And he has really strong hands and can keep them out. Did not show that tonight. I thought it was really disappointing, and it set the tone for most of the game.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you mentioned that my comments earlier about Brad Knighton, and you talked about this a little bit on last week's podcast, Chris.
Yep.
But you know, I just want to emphasize, you know, Matt Turner has played a lot this year, and there have been, not just tonight, there have been a lot of goals that you just expect him to save. Maybe it's not like right at him, but it's to his side, and he's just not as sharp, and it's a little concerning. So, yeah, I mean, he's still playing well. He's still doing very well this season. I don't want to say that he's playing poorly, but he isn't making miraculous saves time and time again, and certainly some of that is on the defense, but yeah, he just doesn't seem to be in as good as he was last year or the year before. And I don't think it's his ability. I think it might just be that, you know, he's playing a ton. And I know that goalkeepers don't need as much rest as outfield players. But, and Brad Knighton, too. You know, he was player of the week in his last game. The last time we saw Brad Knighton, he was player of the week against Philadelphia. So I'm not opposed to keeping your backup sharp. I mean, God forbid Matt Turner goes down. Are you going into the playoffs with Brad Knighton, who hasn't played since August? That might be a tough ask. So I'm curious to see if they work in Knighton at all. I'm guessing they don't. I guess Matt Turner is going to get as much game time as possible to keep him sharp. But yeah, Paul, I miss posting that Mr. Clean Sheet meme. Hopefully we get to do it on Wednesday. But the lack of clean sheets is a real concern for the Revolution right now.
Wait, is it true that I think Brad Knighton has more clean sheets than Matt Turner this year, right?
I can double check that really quick.
That does sound accurate.
Unless they're tied, I'm not sure.
Well, I'm going to ask the next question while I fact check that real quick. But we did get a question from Tejan Stan on Discord. He said, thoughts on how Caicedo, Maciel, and Captoon played? And apparently, Chris, you said Foxborough Stadium instead of Gillette Stadium. I don't know if it was in this podcast or the previous one. But they're calling us boomers on Discord because they said Foxborough Stadium.
Well, everyone over on Discord is 18 years old, so that's fine. Call me a boomer. I don't care. I'm owning it now. I did say Foxborough on this recording, so it's now. My computer might get corrupted after this, so who knows?
Yeah, hashtag over 40 reps. But we've talked about Maciel. We've talked about Captube. Let's give our thoughts on Luis Caicedo. Obviously, he's come back. I think he's been a little bit relatively ineffective. So I'll go to you, Chris, and then if someone wants to pick up after Chris, what are our thoughts on Luis Caicedo and what's his role moving forward?
Yeah, Luis Caicedo, I'm happy to see him getting the minutes and getting out there. But yeah, ineffective, I think, is a perfect word to use for him. I don't think he was bad. I don't think he was good. He just kind of occupied space. You know, I mean, if you want to look at the stats that he's putting up tonight, he had, I mean, it was 96% passing, but he only had 23 passes, which it's good that, you know, only one was missed there. I always look at the touches. I think that's a key stat that you need to pay attention to. 27 touches on the night. He only played one half. So I mean, take that with a grain of salt, but I think you also need to think that Caicedo is not playing 90 minutes still, and is that something that's a concern, or is that because he's not impacting the game? Overall, the whole first half roster was a bunch of essentially bench players, and we expect Caicedo to be more of a starting caliber player, at least when we think of Luis Caicedo the way that we remember him back in 2019. And is he going to return to that player? I don't know, but it's also going to...
No, I think we lost Chris there. Anyone have any thoughts on Luis Caicedo while Chris apparently reconnects?
Well, I think Luis Caicedo, 2018 with Pena, amazing player. It's just ever since his injury, he hasn't really been able to find his groove. I mean, he was out for two whole years pretty much. So I think after that happens, it's really hard for a player to find his groove. But I'm kind of happy because we have seen some sparks of old Caicedo during his starts. So, I mean, I'm kind of happy for that. But I think it will take a while for him to get regular 90-minute games.
Yeah, I agree. And again, you know, we talk about the players that have kind of risen up in central midfield. It seems like Caicedo has lost a little bit of a step compared to prior years. I think he's going to be a bench player going forward into the playoffs. He's going to be a depth piece. And this is another guy that I think you kind of wanted to see a little bit from him today about, you know, maybe he's going to win some minutes going forward, but it's a crowded midfield and he just seems like he's a bit of an afterthought, which is a real shame, but not very high on Luis Caicedo.
Yeah, I think he, I felt like that, obviously, as we were talking about 2018, Caicedo was a player I was really looking forward to see coming back. Obviously, he was out injured for a long time. Player's going to take time to adapt back to that. But if you kind of look what that brought into the squad, and I'll be one to hold my hands up when I make a wrong prediction. I was not a fan of the Tommy Mac or Ulster signing at all. I thought both of them were bad pieces of business. Obviously, how wrong could one person be? I think that on the fact that, you know, obviously I never want to see any player become injured for a long period of time and then struggle for kind of some form coming back into the team. And I was really happy to see him get back on the pitch this season. But I think it's kind of, while it's happened, we've have built this partnership of Polster and Martial really early on, which was good to see. I think they're slightly too similar sometimes. Martial and Polster play a quite similar kind of style in some aspects, and I think that's why maybe the McNamara Polster partnership works better. But I do think that having the option to have a more defensive midfield partnership and then a slightly more attacking midfield partnership in Polster and McNamara is just great to have. Then to have somebody of Luis Caicedo as a depth piece and whatever Captain brings to us is really good to see. And I am gutted for Luis. I would like to see him kind of hit the heights he was performing towards the back end before he got his injury. But to today's match, though, I didn't really see a lot from him. As Chris kind of touched on, though, it wasn't a bad performance. It just wasn't really much of an anything performance from him.
Not standing out, and when you have so many pieces in the midfield, I think you need to stand out at this point this late in the season. So great to see him back on the field. But again, maybe he's going to be a defensive specialist going forward or something like that. Some quick fact-checking here. I just want to get this out of the way. Brad Knighton has 3 clean sheets on the season. Matt Turner has 4. So Knighton is very close. Matt Turner with 4 clean sheets in 22 games. Brad Knighton has 3 clean sheets in 6 games. So there is that real quick. I also want to point out, I've been bringing up Matt Turner has been getting more of a workload than in seasons past. He has 26 games under his belt this season. He had 27 in 2018, 20 in 2019, 22 in 2020, and then 26 this year. Obviously, there is also the All-Star game. Obviously, there's also United States men's national team. Also, it's probably a little bit more of a congested schedule as well, so I still think my point is a little bit, viable. I still think he probably needs a little bit of a rest, and I think kind of the 10 days off following the Wednesday game is going to be a little bit helpful to Matt, who's been flying all over the place. One more thing on Matt Turner as well. We talk about how he's having a bit of a down year. Just quickly looked up on American Soccer Analysis what his goalkeeper expected goal numbers are. And he currently is at -5.76, which means he has saved 5.76 goals over what is expected. That is good for second in the league. He is trailing Andre Blake, who is at minus 6.66. Matt Turner usually leading this category. I feel like in years past, he's been at negative 8, negative 9. So he's probably not in his past as compared to previous years, but still potentially the second best goalkeeper in the league going off of this expected goal stat. So just goes to show, you know, how much we expect from Matt Turner. We were talking about how he might be a little bit sluggish, still an elite MLS goalkeeper overall. One more question here from Oscar. Should we have waited until the last two games to rest our A team to avoid giving momentum to another playoff team? And I believe that was, I don't know if that was Adam Books, a fan number one, who made that point. Actually, it was probably, I think it might have been Randy. I forget who made that point earlier. But giving momentum to another playoff team, potentially damaging. So I think we covered that one a little bit, but I don't know if anyone had thoughts on that, on whether or not we should have waited a little bit later in the season to rest our players. But anyone have any thoughts on that real quick? Nope. Why don't I change the question a little bit? How important is getting the points record? Does anyone here feel passionately, strongly one way or the other? Does this record matter?
Honestly, so when I was watching the game, I was talking to my dad, and he was like, "Oh, I'm just happy that we won the supporter show." I'm like, honestly, I would really enjoy the points record, because that would honestly make a statement for this club. Like, we may have won the supporter shield, but imagine getting the all-time points record that hopefully won't be beaten every year like previous years. I mean, 73 points in a season. If we can get that, that would be amazing for this club. I mean, to have a Guinness World Record, that'd be kind of sick too. So.
Would a points record make Seattle fans stop talking crap? That's what I want to know, and I'm tired of hearing the supporter shield doesn't mean anything because it's an unbalanced schedule. But you know what? The supporter shield was agreed upon beginning of the season, so everyone had a fair shot at it. Everyone knew what the stakes were. You should have just got more points. But if the Revs get the points record, is that something that, you know, the rest of the league is going to have to accept? Or are they going to be saying, "Oh, it's an unbalanced schedule again"? I don't know. But do I think it's something that they should be chasing? Absolutely not. Do I think it's really cool if they get it? Absolutely.
Well, I think it's – I mean – the league has always been unbalanced. You know, this isn't the Premier League where you play every single team twice or whatever. You know, we've been playing teams three or four times in the East, as opposed to, you know, how many times do we go to San Jose? You know, we'll play San Jose once a year, and, you know, and then it's unbalanced. Sometimes you go West, sometimes you go East. So it's never going to be perfectly level either way. It just kind of is all out in the wash. There's never going to be a completely fair way of doing it. So, you know, I kind of mute all of that conversation. I don't know why Sounders fans were trying to rile up and start this debate, you know, a day before we clinched the supporter shield. It just kind of seems to be sour grapes in my mind. And I also want to throw out that, you know, Western Conference is better than the Eastern Conference narrative. I think that's complete crap. I don't really know how, you know, I think there's been 20 games played between the East and the West this year, so it's not really a big sample size. You know, I just don't know what proof there is that the Western Conference is better than the Eastern Conference. The West has won one out of the last four or five MLS Cups. The defending MLS Cup champion is, you know, sitting in 11th place in the Eastern Conference, and they're still a pretty decent team. I don't understand, you know, what this conspiracy theory is that because a certain number of teams have won 13 games that the Western Conference is better than the East. It just seems like insane sour grapes, and I don't really understand it coming from Sounders fans. You know, they've won trophies. It's not like, you know, they've never gotten moments of glory. So I don't understand that narrative that some people were trying to stir up this week. I guess people are just bored out on the West Coast.
Well, I mean, look, technically one conference is definitely going to be better, right? That's just like a matter of fact. But being able to determine which one that is near impossible, if not actually impossible. And then when you go down, look at it, any difference is going to be extremely marginal. It's right. Not going to be four games left in the season winning the supporter shield type of difference. It's not going to be that big of a difference. So
we are 10 games up. We're 10 points up on Seattle. Seattle lost to Houston last week. Why do they think they get to talk crap? Why Seattle ran out a bunch of middle schoolers against Austin FC and got a draw. what it's not like some sort of, you know, insanely strong gauntlet of teams where week in, week out, they're facing Premier League teams. I'm not totally sure where this narrative is coming from, and they're cherry picking these stats to pretend like it's amazing. If there's more 13 win teams in the West than there are in the East, that might just mean that it's more top heavy. It doesn't necessarily reflect the overall quality of the conference. Overall, I annoyed that. Who got me on this rant? I forget what we. Oh,
I did.
The points record. No, I want the points record. I think it would be great. Everything Adam Buksa fan said is absolutely correct. It puts the Revs in the record book. You become, you're no longer the best team in the league. You get to talk about, you know, where does this compare to the Giovinco TFC team and that Red Bulls team from 2018 and the LAFC 2019 team? There are a lot of really, really good teams that have been, you know, it's really put these teams on the map. And I think it's really elevating the Revolution status in MLS overall as a powerhouse. So anyway, before we move on, any thoughts on the points record or anything I've ranted about the last 5 minutes?
I'll say this about the points record. It is kind of interesting that, and potentially in the last three full seasons, so excluding last year's shortened season, we may have set the points record in three straight years with Toronto in 2018 and LAFC in 2019. So I don't know what that says about the league and maybe how great teams tend to be standing out a bit more recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting point too. And maybe to counter that, you know, is if the Revolution set this point record, does someone hurdle it in a couple years? That's an interesting point as well. Adam Brooks, a fan, I saw you unmute yourself. Any thoughts on that?
Well, actually, I had another question. But
sure.
So I was listening to Extra Time, of course. Not the best podcast. This one's obviously better. But so Extra Time, Andrew Wiebe, Charlie Davies is on this one. So they were talking about how – or Charlie Davies brought up the point that how many Revs players will be in the top 11 team of the MLS. And Charlie Davies brought up a good point. They're going to just say, like, the whole Seattle 11 pretty much is going to be on the top 11. But, like, why? I just don't understand. Because you have players like Adam Buks at, what, 16 goals now? Like, 5 assists. Gustavo Bo, 15 goals, like, 8 assists. Like, I just don't understand why the Revs don't get as much recognition as, like, Seattle, who are literally down in the bin right now, who are going to have like 6 players in the top 11. It's actually frustrating.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's not like, again, you can make the argument that because the East and West are isolated from each other, you know, if one side has, you know, insanely weaker competition, Carlos Gil's numbers would be weaker in the West, but I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all. You know, Adam Buks is getting called up to Poland, you know, and, you know, Carlos Gil is, I don't know, I struggle to understand that logic overall. I think their quality is very, very clear. And I think Seattle is one of those teams that just has been an MLS darling their entire existence. They've always been at the top. They're always going to MLS Cups. They are just a very strong team. And I think there's a lot of bias and a lot of name brand. And I think because the Revolution, who, you know, no MLS Cups, you know, obviously went to the MLS Cup in 2014. But outside of that, the past few years have been rough. I think that, you know, just the prior thoughts on this team and these players that I think that a lot of national pundits kind of got caught sleeping on these guys. Whereas Seattle, they're watching these guys every single week. I don't mean to speak ill of Extra Time. I like that podcast as well. Again, as you said, not as good a podcast as us, but that's okay. I just think it might be just some prior bias where they're going to give players who are on Seattle and LA Galaxy and LAFC and Atlanta United a little bit more shine because those are household names.
You know, to that point, I'm looking at the MLS All-Star game this past season, right? Or this current season, this past All-Star game that we had. And the Revolution sent 4 players to the game. I mean, obviously only 2 players went to the game, but they had 4 players selected to the All-Star roster. That was, you know, second only to, of course, Seattle, who had 6 players. But it is interesting to see that the Revolution are getting a little bit more, you know, notoriety from how well they are performing, and it's much well deserved. Frankly, I think that the whole best 11 should just be half Seattle and half Revs players, because I don't want to talk down about Seattle at all. They're a fantastic team, and their players on that roster are really good. Have you seen Kellen Rowe? But really, like, they, like, Joao Paulo, unreal player in midfield, and he's such a difference maker for their team. You know, even Stefan Fry, their goalkeeper, who is one of my favorite goalkeepers in MLS, is just so much fun to be able to watch. And of course, you know, when you talk about Nico Ladero, you want to talk about Rui Diaz. Sure, he's now below Buxa on the Golden Boot race, but people talk about Rui Diaz a lot because he's actually a really lethal goal scorer. He's so good in front of the net. He's had a lot of injuries this year, and he's still putting up a lot of numbers and getting really high up on the stat sheet. So yeah, a lot of these Seattle players really deserve the credit that they're getting. On the flip side, the Revolution players are just not getting the credit that they do deserve. So when does that fix? And I think that's just going to come with success. You know, the Revolution winning trophies and really establishing more of a name for themselves. And I think if they were to win MLS Cup, I think that would really elevate the voting in the Revolution's favor and have a lot more Revolution players in that first 11 over Seattle players.
Agree 100%. Mike, anything to add? Sorry, I hope I didn't cut you off there.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I think it's from kind of obviously like an outsider's perspective looking in on the MLS, it is the fact that I think that Sounders have had such a, you know, they've got a lot of history on their brand already. They were already more like, from the UK's point of view, they were a team talked about. Revolution, I never used to hear about them talked about at all. Where Sounders were, because they were always in, well, there or thereabouts at the end of the season. But it is similar everywhere you go. Like over here, when Leicester won the league for the first time, prior to them doing it, even up until the point when it was like, until it was mathematically, you know, Leicester's title, they still weren't getting that much coverage up until like the last few weeks when people were starting to do a narrative of, you know, Jamie Vardy's come out of, you know, from non-league to now he's hoist the Premier League trophy and, you know, and other players as well of a similar vein. But and then Leicester then went on and had an amazing season, had a rubbish start to the next season, sacked the manager, and then weren't really ever talked about again up until this season when they're starting to now, you know, play a little bit better. Brendan Rodgers has gotten playing some good football again, and they're kind of getting there or thereabouts. But they're still almost forgotten about again now. It's not they're not always in the conversation. It is always about the big six still, and they're not, in my head, that I would classify them in that big six conversation now. But a lot of pundits in the UK still don't classify them as a big team, which is, again, it's just because they've got a one-off league title under their name, and that's it. They've never really been near there again since then. So I think the Reds fans, even if we do win it this season, it'd be great for us, and obviously it'd be great for the whole brand and everything. But I think it doesn't necessarily mean that next season, if we're not kind of there or thereabouts again, that some bandwagon fans will unfortunately fall off. And, you know, it's a great start, and hopefully we can kind of, you know, get people on board, and especially the media in Boston, because, I mean, you hardly ever see us mentioned at all. So it would be nice, but I think there's still a lot of things that we need to do I think the first stepping stone, and then we just need to build on it and keep going. Hopefully it'll have more eyes on us, which means more, you know, celebrities might start talking about us, more high profile people might start talking about us, especially in media. Then, you know, who knows, there might be a stadium at some point in my lifetime. So, you know, it's all good, but I think we've still got to remember that just one MLS Cup doesn't necessarily mean that we've done it.
Yeah, and if you can't start winning the cup again, I guess just start re-rolling that clip of Matt Turner, you know, steamrolling Wayne Rooney if you want to get national notoriety. So,
I will say, I think the media coverage is better, and I think there's more genuine interest this year, because I remember 2014, and I do genuinely think that there is more fans excited about this team. And I think too, and I'm not just saying this because he came on our podcast, but I think it helps having Willie Whitelaw running the social media for the Revolution, as opposed to just kind of your generic tweets. And I think it's a little bit more fun to be a Revs fan now than it did in, say, 2014. And I'll also say that in 2014, you know, we talk about the Boston Globe. I will happily talk about this. This is going to lead to a rant that I don't think we have enough time for because we're already over time. But, you know, Dan Shaughnessy, you know, Revolution lose 2014 MLS Cup, and arguably the biggest sports writer, the biggest paper, tweeted out, "I'm glad the Revolution lost so we no longer have to pretend that they are relevant." And from that moment forward, I realized that I am not going to let my enjoyment of this team hinge on the coverage of this team or how much the legacy media, you know, gives them coverage. Because if I cared about what they said and what they did, I really would, you know, it would really take away a little bit of my enjoyment, because there is this great team that's happening with the New England Revolution right now. And if I was focused on, you know, I know when someone tweets out about, you know, they mention the other four teams and they forget about the Revs, a lot of fans, you know, correct them and all that. And that's fine. That's fine with me. But I also just think, like, you know, it's one of those things that you can't take it too seriously, because it's going to take away from your enjoyment a little bit. And I'm going to call out WEEI too, because 2 weeks ago they posted this nonsense. I shouldn't say nonsense article, but people gave them crap because the Greg Hill Show tweeted out a poll about what they're excited about, and one of the options was nothing. So nothing made it into their poll above the Revolution, and that's a morning show that Elizabeth Pahota, you know, was on earlier this summer. It's not like they don't know the Revolution exists. So, and then WEEI posted, you know, it's time to respect the Revs, yada yada yada. And I went back before this podcast, because I actually was going to call them out for this. I went back before this podcast and I scrolled their Twitter feed, and they have not tweeted out anything about the Revolution winning the Supporters Shield. They have not acknowledged on their Twitter feed that the Revolution have won a major championship. You know, I think it's just a bunch of crap to say that it's time to respect the Revolution. The Revolution deserve more respect. And then instead of tweeting about the Revolution, you're tweeting about, and I'm not joking about this, they tweeted out about Avery Bradley, who has not been on the Celtics for years, not scoring a point, getting a rebound, getting an assist in 20 minutes. You know, Avery Bradley's been on the Lakers for 3 years or something like that. And he's getting WEEI's attention while the Revolution fall by the wayside. So that's my little rant. I could go on for a long, long time about that. But whatever happens throughout here, you know, we'll be here. I know Tom Quinlan has his podcast. I wish 6-8-1 podcast was still going to be here. You know, I think the Revolution fan base that is on Twitter is way more fun than anything the Boston Globe can put in their newspaper. So I'm done caring about the Boston sports media landscape, and that's my rant. I think it's a bunch of crap, and that is my rant right there. So sorry for that, went on too long. I'm trying to. Oh, also, I do have one more question here. Chris, do you have anything to add before I move on from that?
No, I was just going to say it was very well said, and it's it didn't go on long enough. If anything, you know,
I could literally sit here and talk for 2 hours about how the Boston media has failed the Revolution, and how the Revolution, I don't want to say enables it, but I think is. You know, they're every time WEEI or 98.5 or does something, they toss them a bone. And, you know, I think fans seem to take it as a sign, and just never is. And it's tough. But anyway, I could, as I say, that's another story for another day. I'll get into that rant another day. But Adam Brooks, a fan, you have anything to add before I move on here?
Yeah, I'm going to say a quick point. It also doesn't help that Boston fans have been spoiled by these four teams constantly over the years. That just doesn't help, like, one bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. And, you know, a lot of people made the comments about the Red Sox and you know, it was supposed to be a down year for the Red Sox. And I know a lot of people kind of made the best team in Boston comment. I haven't really ranted about this too, but I think that Red Sox fans, you can coexist and be a Red Sox fan and be a Revs fan. And the thing I hate about that best team in Boston line is, if the Red Sox are good, which they were, they just had a very successful season. I know it ended pretty poorly and very disappointingly, but you know, you don't want to put your eggs in the basket as we're the winners of Boston, because you get bandwagon fans. I think that if you introduce people to soccer, they're gonna fall in love with it. I just know it. I know so many people that have gotten into soccer late in life, and so anyway, I that's another rant for another day, but. I do have one more question here. It's getting late. It's 11:30. It's past my bedtime. So I do have one more question here. But Macho on Discord says, at this point, should the Revs just pay Adam Buksa whatever he wants to keep him here? That's a very big question mark. Adam Buksa has kind of indicated that with his involvement with the Polish national team, he might be going back overseas. You know, he apparently is under contract for one more year. I believe he made that comment that he is on a 3-year contract. But it seems like he is in talks with other teams and moving, and it seems like I mean, Bruce Arena obviously hasn't commented. I don't think anyone's made the question because there won't be an answer. But Chris, any thoughts on Adam Buksa and if the Revolution should just give him a blank check to keep him here?
I mean, first of all, I'm going to say no to the blank check. I think Buksa is an extremely valuable player, but not a player that's worth giving a blank check to. He's not going to single-handedly go out there and win you a game. You know, his performance tonight was fantastic. His performance a lot of nights is really, really good. I think that the amount of money that you're assuming that you're giving to Buksa on a blank check could go out and get a much more established, a much more well-rounded and already, you know, at the peak of their career type player instead of a Buksa player. And if someone's coming in offering the Revolution money for Buksa, you need to take that money this offseason, I think. There's no way that Adam Buksa is going to be signing an extension to his contract. He made it clear when he first came over that he's only here as a way to help jumpstart his career. He saw MLS and the Revolution as an opportunity for him to make, you know, a personal advancement and to you know, hone on his skills and to get better. He had goals of playing for the Polish national team. He has now accomplished that thanks to his play in MLS, and he has made it clear that he does not plan on staying in MLS, and he wants to go to Europe. And there's been a lot of talk about him going this offseason. So if that's going to happen, let it happen. Don't fight it. Let him do what he needs to do. I hope that he has all the success in the world wherever he does go. I'm going to have a lot of fun following him. I'm going to follow him much more than I'm going to follow Tejan Buchanan. Nothing Good. Against Tejan Buchanan, but I'm just a bigger Buksa fan than I am Buchanan fan. And don't go writing blank checks like that. It's, you know, the only player on the team worthy of a blank check is Carlos Heel. Carlos Heel is not looking to go anywhere else. You need to keep him happy. He's going to keep the team happy. He's going to keep producing. He's your playmaker. You need to build a team around Carlos Heel, not around Adam Buksa. You don't build a team around a striker anyway, I don't think. So no blank checks for me, as much as I love Buksa, and I hate to say that. I don't know, Adam Buksa, number one fan, do you have a different opinion there?
No, I agree 100%. I've always wanted him to grow. Like, I was, when Golden Hand, you know, like last season, would just criticize him, I'd always tell Golden Hand, give him a chance, give him a chance, give him a chance. Now, Golden Hand just thinks that Buksa is like an amazing player now, and I tell everyone this, I expect no less than 10 million for the man, because that man is honestly a proven goal scorer. Like, that's what some teams need, a proven tall goal scorer who can score goals off set pieces. Nowadays it's like that fast guy, but we see that Adam Buksa holds up the play well. He even, like, he gets those assists, he gets in the box. He's a very good target man and a very good goal scorer. And I would be happy to see him go to, like, personally, I want to see him go to, like, if it was Premier League, Leicester, I think I could see him at. But I would like to see him go to Bundesliga, kind of follow Lewandowski's steps a little bit, because he honestly could be the next Lewandowski.
You know, it's interesting. I was watching the match tonight. One side of the field, you have Daryl Dike. The other side, you had Adam Buksa. And I was like, there's a real chance that, you know, in a few years, you could see these two playing against each other in a European competition, whether that be the Champions League or a different, you know, domestic league to that whatever country that they might end up in. And that would be such a unique and fun scenario to see that match and then look back, hey, you know, 4 years ago, look at this match between, you know, Adam Buksa and Daryl Dike, where it's going to, of course, highlight that Daryl Dike only got a penalty goal and Adam Buksa got a brace, which is going to be even better to look back at. But I was thinking about that tonight, too. And, you know, those are two players from MLS that are going to be going somewhere in Europe. I mean, obviously, Adam Buksa is Polish. He wants to play closer to his family and his home. And you have to respect that. But it's going to be fun to see where he goes. And I think the Revolution should cash in on any offers that they get for him, because I don't think they're going to have any other opportunities for that.
Agreed.
I mean, yeah, and you know, when they bought, I was just going to say, when they bought him, I think that they wanted to spin him into a profit. They wanted to kind of build up this, they saw a lot of potential with him, and they wanted to build him and sell him for profit. So if it's true he's entering his last year of the contract, I think this is the time to do it. So it sucks that he's finally hitting his stride. And, but I think that this was kind of the intention for the Revolution, to build him up and hit him at his peak value. So, sorry, did you have anything to add there, Adam Buksa fan?
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, we saw earlier a huge report that Leicester was actually looking into Adebuxa. So just that as a whole just makes me just want to see him grow more.
Yes. Although they're not a big six team, according to the English media.
They are, honestly. They're bigger than Tottenham and Man United. I'm a Man United fan, too. They're bigger.
Well, sorry.
You're lucky Sean's not here, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say we'd have to the Ben Musket with an absolutely savage tweet the other day. What was it? Like they counted the days since the last Tottenham trophy, and they said 0 days compared to 0 days for the Revolution. So, we love our shots at Tottenham. So you fit in very well here, Adam.
The big six, honestly, at this point, I know this is the MLS podcast, but it's honestly just should be dismantled at this point. I'm not going to lie. It shouldn't be. I mean, there should be like a top three, like Liverpool, Man City, and I'm not really sure the third one could be. But
West Ham, right?
Yeah, West Ham easily.
The greatest decision I ever made was to stop being an Arsenal fan 6 years ago. I gotta say that saved me a lot of time and a lot of stress. So
yeah, my entire family is Arsenal fans, so that doesn't really help a lot.
Thoughts and prayers. That is not a fun one. Well, we're getting to 11:30. This has gone on very well. Thank you, everyone, who have joined us here tonight. Before we wrap up, I guess we have final thoughts. Chris, do you have any final thoughts before we depart here tonight?
Look, I just want to reiterate the fact that the Revolution are officially 2021 MLS Supporter Shield winners. This is such an amazing moment for the team, for the supporters, for everyone to enjoy. So everyone just soak it up, enjoy this. Who knows when we're going to see this again? Hopefully we see it again next year. Who knows? But enjoy this moment. And, you know, if you can get to the game November 7th, they're going to have the presentation of the Supporter Shield there. Try to get to that game, enjoy it again, soak it up, just enjoy the moment, because you know, these they're fleeting, and who knows how many more times like these we're gonna get.
Yep.
And Adam Books, a fan, any thoughts before we depart here tonight?
See you all at the MLS Cup final.
Ooh, there we go. Hope Cursed Revs is listening to this, so just to warn you, you might you better hope they make it. Well, either way, on November 7th, the Supporter Shield will be there as well. I suppose it's going to be there Wednesday. I assume it's already in the Revolution possession, and I've seen some fans with it. So either way, the Supporter Shield is making its way to Foxborough. Extremely, extremely satisfying weekend to be a Revolution fan. And I was personally hoping to get into, you know, the Revolution tying this game actually screwed up my podcast plans, because I wanted to get into the Supporter Shield, what it meant for the fans. I was hoping to ask a lot of the fans who obviously we have a bit of a smaller crowd right now, an hour into the podcast, about what it means to them. But I guess we'll just have to do another Twitter Spaces sometime and kind of get more of a crowd in for that one and talk about this 2021 season and what the Supporter Shield means for them. Maybe we'll do that at the end of the season. But for now, it's 11:30. We're getting to the end of our podcast here, and I just want to thank everyone who is still online, who has been with us for over an hour, listening to us talk about the Revolution and tonight's match. If you don't already, please follow us on Twitter at Revolution Recap, and please follow our Revolution Recap Instagram and Facebook pages. Also, please check out our sponsor, Golasso Kits, and use our promo code REVSRECAP for 15% off your order. They have a great selection of jerseys. You won't be disappointed. And please make sure you're subscribed to on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts to Revolution Recap. We are available on all platforms. And if you could, please rate and review us 5 stars. It helps people looking for Revolution content find it. There's a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon, and they need to know about this podcast. So please rate and review us 5 stars. And thank you to everyone. Adam Buxa fan, thank you for joining us. Paul, thank you for joining us tonight. Mike, Revs UK, Gustavo Lopez. I'm sure I'm forgetting a few people who have come in and out. To everyone who is still listening to us, thank you so much for doing this live Twitter Spaces. We love the engagement. We love the interaction. We love giving fans a voice. So thank you so much for listening. Revs have a home midweek match against Colorado on Wednesday. No podcast for that one because of the midweek. We'll be off next weekend with no game. But we will have a recap podcast for the season finale, November 7th, against Inter-Miami and their 5 or 6 designated players. Until then, thank you, everyone, for listening, and go Revs.